Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Monday, October 7th. Today, we're joined by Eric and Kate to discuss a recent analysis of FDA antidepressant warnings. Let's dive right in, shall we? Welcome to our discussion on the recent analysis of FDA antidepressant warnings. Today, we'll explore the impact of these warnings on mental health treatment and suicide rates among young people. Let's start with the background. Eric, can you explain what these FDA warnings are?
Absolutely, Ted. So back in 2003, the FDA dropped a bombshell. They warned that antidepressants might actually increase suicidal thoughts in kids under 18. Talk about a plot twist, right? By 2005, they weren't messing around anymore. They slapped a big old black box warning on all antidepressant labels. You know, the kind you can't miss even if you're trying. And just when we thought they were done, bam. In 2007, they expanded this warning to include young adults up to 24. It was like a domino effect of caution.
That's right. But it's important to note that these warnings were put in place to protect vulnerable young people from potential harm. The FDA doesn't
hold your horses, Kate. While I get the FDA's intentions, we can't ignore the fact that these warnings had some serious unintended consequences. It's like they threw the baby out with the bathwater. The study we're discussing.
But we can't be sure those increases were directly caused by the warnings. Correlation doesn't equal causation. There could be other factors.
Come on, Kate. Let's not bury our heads in the sand. This study looked at 34 peer-reviewed studies over 14 years. That's not just a blip on the radar. The consistency of the findings across multiple outcomes strongly suggests a causal relationship.
Let's dig into some specifics. Eric, what were the numbers regarding the decline in treatment?
Sure thing, Ted. The numbers are pretty staggering. We're looking at a 20% to 50% nosedive in antidepressant use after these warnings hit the scene. But that's not all, folks. There were also 20% to 45% drops in depression diagnoses and doctor visits for depression. It's like people suddenly decided en masse that they'd rather suffer in silence than seek help. These aren't small potatoes we're talking about. These are massive shifts in how people approach mental health treatment.
But those declines could be due to other factors like increased stigma or changes in healthcare access. We can't just assume it's all.
Kate, I hear you, but let's look at the bigger picture. The study specifically zeroed in on abrupt changes following the warnings. Before the warnings, trends were on the up and up. Then, boom, sharp decline right after. That's not just a coincidence. That's a clear indication of cause and effect. It's like watching a car crash.
What about the intended benefits of the warnings? Kate, did they achieve their goals?
Well, Ted, the warnings were meant to increase monitoring of patients on antidepressants for suicidality. While the study suggests this didn't improve significantly, it doesn't mean the warnings weren't valuable in other ways. They raised awareness about potential risks, which is crucial for informed decision making. It's like putting a caution hot label on a coffee cup. Even if people don't always check the temperature, they're more aware of the potential danger.
Actually, the study found that less than 5% of pediatric patients were monitored according to FDA recommendations, both before and after the warnings. There were no documented improvements in mental health care or declines in suicide attempts or deaths. It's like putting up a beware of dog
sign. But raising awareness about potential risks is still important, even if it doesn't immediately translate to improved monitoring. We can't just ignore the potential dangers of these medications. It's about giving people the information.
The problem is that this awareness seems to have scared people away from necessary treatment, potentially leading to more harm than good. It's like telling people not to wear seatbelts because they might get a bruise in a crash. Sure, you're aware of the bruise.
Let's put
risk,
this in historical context. Can you think of a similar situation where well-intentioned warnings had unintended negative consequences?
Absolutely. This reminds me of the swine flu vaccine scare in 1976. Talk about a blast from the past. The U.S. government, fearing a pandemic, rushed out a vaccine program faster than you can say oink. But when reports of a rare neurological disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome started popping up, public fear spread like wildfire. Next thing you know, vaccination rates dropped faster than a hot potato. It's a classic case of good intentions paving the road to, well, you know where.
That's not a fair comparison. The swine flu situation was a short-term event, while these antidepressant warnings have been in place for years.
The principle is the same, Kate. In both cases, warnings about a relatively rare side effect led to widespread avoidance of a potentially life-saving treatment. The 1976 incident resulted in unnecessarily low vaccination rates, just as these FDA warnings have led to reduced antidepressant use. It's like we're watching history repeat itself, but this time in
slow motion. How did the swine flu situation play out, and what lessons can we draw from it?
Well, Ted, it's a classic case of much ado about nothing. The feared pandemic, it never showed up. The vaccine program halted faster than you can say false alarm. And get this, later studies showed the risk of Guillain-Barré was lower than initially thought. Talk about a plot twist. But here's the kicker. This whole debacle damaged public trust in vaccines for years. It's like crying wolf, but with syringes. The lesson? Sometimes our attempts to protect can backfire spectacularly if we're not careful.
But surely it's better to err on the side of caution when it comes to public health? We can't just ignore potential risks.
Not when that caution leads to more harm than good. In the case of antidepressants, we're seeing increased suicide rates as a result of these warnings. It's like avoiding water because you're afraid of drowning, only to die of thirst. Sometimes
we can't be certain those increases are solely due to the warnings. There could be other factors at play. Mental health is complex, and we shouldn't oversimplify the issue.
The study we're discussing shows a clear temporal relationship between the warnings and these negative outcomes across multiple studies. It's not just one study saying this. It's a whole body of evidence. We're talking about a clear pattern here.
How might this historical parallel inform our approach to the current situation with antidepressant warnings?
We should be careful about drawing too many parallels. Mental health is complex, and we can't simply remove warnings without considering all potential consequences. It's not as straightforward as a vaccine scare. We're dealing with ongoing treatments that affect brain chemistry. We need to tread carefully and consider all angles before making any drastic changes.
The parallel shows us that we need to balance risk communication with the potential for unintended consequences. In this case, the warnings seem to be doing more harm than good. It's like we've set up a big danger sign that's scaring people away from a life raft in stormy seas. Yes, there might be some risk in getting on that raft, but it's a lot safer than drowning. We need to find a way to communicate risks without causing panic or avoidance of necessary treatment.
Looking forward, how do you think the situation might unfold? Eric, what's your prediction if the warnings remain in place?
If these warnings stay as they are, I predict we'll continue to see depressed rates of antidepressant use among young people, leading to more untreated depression and potentially higher suicide rates. The study showed sustained declines in treatment after the warnings were implemented. It's like we've scared people away from using life jackets because there's a tiny chance they might chafe. Sure, you avoid the chafing, but you're much more likely to drown. We're potentially sacrificing lives on the altar of overcaution.
That's a pretty dire prediction. I think healthcare providers will adapt over time, finding ways to communicate the risks without scaring patients away from necessary treatment. We shouldn't underestimate the ability of doctors.
But the study shows no improvement in monitoring or outcomes over 14 years. How much longer should we wait while young people suffer? We're not talking about a short-term blip here. This is over a decade of sustained negative impact. It's like watching a slow-motion car crash.
Removing the warnings could lead to overprescription and increased risk of suicidality in some patients. We can't ignore the original reason for these warnings. There's a real risk here that we can't just sweep under the rug.
What if the FDA decides to modify or remove the warnings? Kate, how do you see that playing out?
If the warnings are removed, we might see a dangerous swing in the other direction. Antidepressants could be overprescribed without proper consideration of the risks, especially for young people. It's like opening the floodgates without any safeguards in place. We could end up with a whole new set of problems on our hands. Plus, removing the warnings might erode public trust in the FDA. People might wonder what other risks they're not being told about.
I disagree. Removing the black box warning doesn't mean removing all warnings. The study authors suggest replacing it with routine warnings in product labeling, which would still inform patients and doctors without causing undue alarm. It's about
finding the right
balance. But
black box warnings carry more weight. Regular labeling might be ignored, leading to inadequate risk communication. We can't just bury important information in fine print and hope for the best. These warnings exist for a reason.
The current situation is leading to undertreatment, which is clearly harmful. A more balanced approach could save lives. We're not talking about throwing caution to the wind here. It's about recalibrating our approach based on the evidence we now have. Sometimes
we need to focus on improving mental health care and monitoring, not just changing warnings. It's not enough to just fiddle with the labeling. We need a comprehensive approach that addresses the root issues. We should be
Why not do both? Remove the black box warning and redirect efforts towards better monitoring and treatment protocols. It's not an either-or situation. We can improve care while also addressing the unintended consequences of these warnings. It's like fixing both the engine and the
brakes. Do you see any middle ground between these two scenarios?
Perhaps we could modify the warnings to emphasize the importance of treatment while still noting the risks. Education for healthcare providers could also help. We could create a more nuanced warning that doesn't scare people away from treatment, but still ensures they're informed. Maybe something that highlights the risks of both taking and not taking antidepressants. It's about finding that sweet spot between caution and encouraging necessary treatment.
I'd support that if it includes clear language about the risks of undertreatment. The warnings need to balance all potential harms, not just focus on medication risks. We need to paint the full picture. Yes, there are risks with antidepressants, but there are also serious risks with untreated depression. It's like warning about the dangers of both speeding and driving too slowly on a highway. Both extremes can be dangerous, and people need to understand that.
Thank you, Eric and Kate, for this enlightening discussion. It's clear that this is a complex issue with no easy answers. As we wrap up, it's evident that balancing the risks and benefits of antidepressant use, especially in young people, requires careful consideration and ongoing research. We'll be watching closely to see how this situation develops. Until next time, this is Ted from Listen2, signing off.